X-Talks connects professionals in the life science, medical device, and food industries with useful content like webinars, job openings, articles, and virtual meetings to help you succeed in your career. This Food Industry Focus podcast brings together some of our editorial staff to share insights into the latest B2B industry news to help keep you up to date. This week on the show, we're discussing Monster Energy as potential buyer for competitor Bang Energy and the WHO's new guidelines for marketing food to children. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the X-Talks Food Podcast. I'm Sydney Perlmutter, Senior Food Industry Journalist and Webinar Moderator at xtalks.com, and this week I'm joined by Aisha Rashid and Vera Kovacevich. Thanks for coming today. So I'm going to start us off with a story about a World Health Organization new guidelines that came out last week. So the World Health Organization, or WHO, released these new guidelines that emphasize the critical role that marketers must play in safeguarding children's health. So the WHO underscored the need for tighter regulations to protect children from the adverse effects of food marketing. And this directive of marketing food to children carries profound implications, demanding a significant shift in child-focused marketing strategies. So the marketing of food products that are high in saturated in trans fats, free sugars, and or salt, known as HFSS, has been a subject of debate. And the WHO's research indicates that such advertising can shape children's dietary preferences, promote unhealthy food intake, and pave the way for potential health issues like obesity and heart disease. So the WHO's new guidelines recommend compulsory regulations on marketing HFSS foods and non-alcoholic beverages, underscoring that previous voluntary measures have been inadequate. Now, this shift to obligatory rules marks an urgent call for marketers involved in marketing food to children to revisit their strategies and contemplate their contribution to public health. The guidelines expressly discourage tactics that take advantage of children's susceptibilities, such as using cartoons, offering toy giveaways, catchy songs, and celebrity endorsements. And this necessitates marketers to be more innovative and ethically conscious in their approach to marketing food to children. So there are obviously some challenges in doing so, and it's likely that we will see some new changes that, it is likely that some will see these new changes as restrictive, particularly as it curbs familiar marketing tactics traditionally used to attract children. And while initially perceived as hurdles, they should instead be viewed as an opportunity for marketers to reshape their strategies and push their creative boundaries, leading to a transformative shift within the industry. So marketers now have an open field to devise campaigns that effectively balance the dual objectives of fostering company growth and promoting public health as well. So this shift calls for marketing that appeals to children, parents, and caregivers alike, emphasizing the nutritional value and health benefits of food products instead of merely relying on promotional tricks. And moreover, this shift encourages the industry to formulate healthier options and market them persuasively, and it promotes competition, not just in branding and sales, but also in creating the healthiest products for children. Many people believe that the primary goal of the marketing industry is to push products and boost sales. And from this standpoint, children's health is seen as the responsibility of parents, educators, and public health authorities, not marketers. However, there's growing consumer demand for brands to act responsibly and contribute positively to societal health. Broadly speaking, these guidelines encourage the marketing industry to assume an active role in the health of children, an impact that extends beyond immediate business goals. And these new this new role sees marketers as not just promoters of products, but also contributors to the larger societal objective of nurturing healthier generations. So while this new path may seem challenging initially, it actually opens doors to some broader horizons, and it spurs the industry to create marketing campaigns that positively impact children's health and explore how business growth can coexist with public well-being. So conforming to the WHO's new guidelines offers, like I said, an opportunity for marketing managers to innovate and market their food products more ethically. So this calls for a multitude of strategies, many of which rest on companies' willingness to devise and introduce healthier alternatives to their current offerings. So some of the following strategies that companies could explore include emphasizing nutritional benefits, so highlighting your product's nutritional content as a selling point, emphasizing the healthy ingredients and their benefits in your product, and if necessary, reformulate products to enhance their nutritional value. Second thing is targeting parents. So redirect your marketing efforts toward parents who generally make the buying decisions for food products and educate them about the nutritional advantages of your products and how they contribute to a balanced diet. Third, promote healthy lifestyles. So market a lifestyle rather than just a product. Design campaigns that promote physical activity, balanced eating habits, and overall well-being. And this approach positions your brand as one that values its consumers' health. Fourth, develop healthier alternatives. If your company is involved in marketing HFSS products, contemplate developing healthier substitutes. This not only offers consumers more choices, but also extends your target market to include health-conscious consumers. And then lastly, encourage transparency and education. So be honest about your product's nutritional content and provide consumers with information on how your product fits into a nutritious diet. So the shift in marketing food to children as endorsed by the WHO guidelines might be challenging, but it's an opportunity for growth and innovation within the food and beverage industry. So I feel like for a while, marketing food to children has been like a subject of debate, concerning ethics and public health. So just as a broader question, how much, obviously the WHO thinks a lot, but how much do you think marketing contributes to things like childhood obesity and heart disease, as opposed to other things like just consumer habits and parents making these decisions? Like, how big of a role do you think marketing plays in developing these sorts of things?
I'm trying to remember when I was a kid if I remember any food commercials or even paying attention to food ads, and I honestly don't remember doing that. I think as children we're more interested in toys and going outside, and I guess today's generation maybe perhaps goes on plays games on the tablet or something. I just don't see children really paying attention to marketing of food products. I feel like they're more influenced by what their peers are eating in the classroom than some ad on TV, which they probably may not even pay attention to commercials. And honestly, I don't think a lot of people watch TV, cable anymore. There's Netflix and all these things. For sure, though, the food marketing efforts are, getting out there, and they're for sure influencing, some children. I just don't know how many. And I also think that children are more influenced by what their parents and friends are eating than what appears on a commercial or on a print ad somewhere, let's say a bus station, if they're with their parents there. So for me, I'm just not totally clear, Sydney. Are these only new guidelines? It's not going to become mandatory?
I think they actually, previous guidelines were voluntary, but I'm pretty sure these ones are obligatory. So I think they're more serious than previous ones, just because it was mentioned that previous guidelines were inadequate and didn't really make a change. It's interesting because it's the guidelines recommend compulsory regulation. So I think they still have to go through approval by some form of government or some higher agency. But I think if they were to pass, then it would become compulsory. That's my understanding.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know how you feel about that, but I feel like it's being a little too restrictive to the food industry. I don't like just these regulations about, how you should market something like junk food, which anybody can go in a store and get their hands on. Like, it's To me, that's a little bit too like controlling. I feel like it's not the government's place to tell like food companies, oh, you know, this is how you should market this soft drink or this candy. I just feel like that's a little too restrictive, because like, how are they going to market chocolate bars or chips, like, or quote unquote junk food? Like, how are they going to market that? Because any marketing they do, like, a child can see that, right? So I'm just, I don't know if it's been thought out very carefully, but I guess that's what they're going to do right now.
Well, yeah. Okay. So you brought up two really good points. And the first one being like, children consume different media than they did when we were children, which was a heavy focus on TV, like cable TV with ads. And nowadays, I would say children probably consume a decent amount of like YouTube. And depending on whether or not they have ad block on their iPad or computer, that they may or may not see ads. And you're right, like in the era of streaming, there's far fewer ads. And I am kind of curious as to like how children are consuming various types of marketing and whether it's really getting through to them. I think like where it would get through to them the most is if like, let's say a kid or two was like with their parent going grocery shopping and their parents are sort of like, oh, which one do you want? Do you want the one with like the fun character on it? Or do you want the name, like nameless, like nothing brand cereal, let's say. So I think that is maybe where like a kid would be influence, and you're totally right as well with like seeing what their peers are eating. And the second point that I agree with is in terms of like how restrictive the government or any agency should be with marketing. And with this, it is specific to children, but at the end of the day, it is the parents or the caregivers or whoever who are making the purchasing decisions. It's not the children. And sure, like children can demand something of their parents, but it's really sort of up to the parents or whoever is taking care of the child to make those final decisions. So I do really wonder like how much marketing has an impact on children. And like, I remember like some kind of iconic commercials for like Gushers with the kids that their heads turned into various fruit, if you remember that. I think that was like genius marketing. And I think rather than like, yeah, being so restrictive with marketing, it stems more from like education and like just promoting a balanced diet at the end of the day. So yeah, that's my thoughts on it. But Aisha, what do you think?
Yeah, so I kind of have a lot to say on this, and my experience has been kind of the opposite of Vera, actually. Growing up, I was bombarded with like food ads through traditional TV, you know, TV marketing, commercials, and all of that good stuff. And yeah, it was a huge influence because like my sister and I knew every single sugary cereal on the market. Even before we got to the stores, we would look out for them, whether it was like snacks like Dunkaroos and all of that like sweet stuff. And it played a huge part in growing up. Like I can remember so many commercials, and more so than school, I think that kind of marketing really influenced our food choices, at least not the meals we were having that my mom was cooking. Like that was all great, but it was the after school snacks and all that junk food that, you know, as kids, it was seen as okay to eat. Like even though my parents were super responsible and we had really great healthy meals, but the snacks were questionable because again, back when I was growing up, there wasn't that much of a focus on it. It was kind of considered a part of a healthy diet where it's like, okay, you have your healthy meals, but then you can have your junk too, and it'll like balance out. It was kind of that attitude, which I think it was okay for the most part. Like, you know, I wasn't crazy on junk food anyway. But yeah, like in school, we would have the healthy snacks, like the apples and like the crackers and peanut butter, which I hated peanut butter. But you didn't have any of those crazy cartoony, you know, like snacks and things like that. But then you go home and watch TV and whoa, you'd just be bombarded with it. And then step two was getting to like the grocery stores. And yeah, like in addition to what we'd seen on TV, then you'd have like the aisles lined with like all of these colorful, like, you know, images on packages, and so the packaging was like just like screaming for you to like like pick them up and like be like, Mom, I want this, and you know, just be like an annoying brat. More my sister more so than me, I would say. But so yeah, I would say like I have vivid memories of marketing of foods when I was a kid. And yeah, like Vera and Sydney, how you were both saying, the game is changing with you know, shift towards like digital media now and social media platforms. So it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see what kids are consuming like online now, right? And I don't know how, like, yeah, there are less ads in terms of like you can get like ad-free programming and things like that, but I think still on social media you'll be running into things, and so I wonder how you know, food companies are dealing with that. Some are more slow to get onto these kinds of platforms than others, and keeping up with the trends. But I know that like food trends are huge on platforms like TikTok, right? And I would assume that kids are watching this and becoming influenced, like food challenges and all of these things. I'm not really, you know, too in tune with exactly what's going on, but you hear about these things from time to time. Consuming Tide Pods, I don't know if that consider that's food. Like you have all of this stuff happening, and that can't be ignored. I find these guidelines to be a bit odd almost, because, and you know, the recommendations are like, oh, why don't you, you know, highlight the nutritional benefits, but like what if there are none? You know, like for some junk food, it's just like, it's just junk, it's just feel good, you know, taste good stuff. So, you know, or target parents, how do you target parents? Hey, give your kids this really sugary stuff, it's good, you know, or promote. you just can't for some of these things. It is what it is, and you know, these companies aren't kidding you that this is actually good for you. So I don't know, it's kind of interesting, but I see where obviously the WHO is coming from. And I was actually trying to look up whether there are studies that link consumption of TV of marketing and how that plays into rising obesity or other health indicators. And I couldn't find any specific studies, but apparently funding into food marketing to kids has increased over the years, and it continues to increase. In 2018, I think food and beverage ads accounted for 23% of all ads aired during kids programming, which was a significant increase from 15% in 2012. So definitely. And then alongside that, you have rising rates of obesity and other health issues. So there's definitely a link, but I haven't come across any specific studies. Maybe they're out there, but, and then there was a study in New Zealand where they put cameras on kids and they wanted to see what they're consuming visually, every day. And they found that, yeah, there were a lot of food ads targeted to kids. So when they, you know, took a look at the tapes and stuff, so yeah, it's an issue, definitely. And it's concerning whether you're marketing food or anything to kids, because they're young, impressionable, can't make their own decisions. And sometimes parents, they're just too stressed out and they just give in to their kids' demands and things like that. So it's a very interesting topic. Definitely, we do need to do more in terms of promoting healthier options for kids. But I'm not sure if these guidelines are going to really do anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just wondering, like, you know, as a kid, I did see those commercials too, and I loved them, but I was never like going to my parents and I'm like, buy me these now.
My like, sister kind of was like that.
Was, okay, so I guess, you know,
and all that stuff. Like,
it depends on, you know, the behavioral, you know, how the audacity of the kid, and the willingness of the parents to sort of give in. But yeah, I just kind of wonder, like, whether kids, when they grow up, like how much of an influence like those days will still have on them as adults, like or nothing is ever too late either. Like if you do suffer from like heart disease and childhood obesity, like it's you're not necessarily, yes, you weren't set up well, but you're not necessarily doomed for the rest of your life. I think really like the bigger picture here is just like proper education from a young age, both in the home and in school as well. And just like promoting a balanced diet and exercise, because there is nothing wrong with like a treat. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Even once a day. Like, there really isn't. And I think it's actually good to not be restrictive with your kid either. Like, the balance is everything. Yeah. So, yeah.
And that's exactly what I had growing up. It's not like we were, like, having these treats for our meals and stuff. Right. So, like, my parents weren't horrible parents or anything. But, you know, it was just, like, an after-school snack. And it consisted of something, like, you know, some kind of a treat that wasn't so great for you. But, and it turned out okay. And then, when, you know, you grow up, it was kind of a phase, right? Like, you're not eating Dunkaroos as an adult or anything like that.
Speak for yourself, but
oh, okay. Maybe you're fulfilling your childhood.
I think they're defunct anyway, unfortunately. Yeah.
But I didn't like them anyway. But yeah, they're just so they were just so in your face, I remember. I don't know if it was just back when I was growing up, it was like that, or they were all over the place. So yeah, I mean, obviously we do need balance and definitely need to have healthier kids, because you're seeing so many health problems now. And back when I was growing up, it wasn't such an issue. But of course, that's evolved to be a different story now. So,
All right. Well, moving on to sort of a different type of debatably unhealthy beverage story. So Monster Energy, which is one of the major energy drink players, might soon become the savior and executioner of its competitor, Bang Energy. As reported by the Wall Street Journal, Monster Energy is poised to acquire its smaller rival for $362 million through a bankruptcy court agreement. So this transaction is pending approval at the moment from the Bankruptcy Court and the Federal Trade Commission, or FTC, which is currently reviewing the potential sale. But if given the green light, this deal could potentially be beneficial for both brands. So for Monster Energy, this deal presents the opportunity to acquire all of Bang Energy's assets from its parent company, Vital Pharmaceuticals, Inc. And this follows a series of encounters that have weakened the energy drink brand's position, including a false advertising lawsuit that was actually initiated by Monster Energy, and their role as one of Bang Energy's largest creditors during the bankruptcy proceedings. On the other hand, if the agreement doesn't go through, Bang Energy may face closure, as lawyers for the brand highlighted in a recent court hearing. And this unfortunate situation could result in the loss of approximately 700 jobs, as reported by Bloomberg. In these circumstances, Bang Energy finds itself in a precarious situation, placing its hopes on the very competitor that contributed to its predicament. So I'll just describe a little bit of the, you know, rocky relationship between the two brands. So the relationship between Bang and Monster has been marked by heated competition ever since Bang entered the market in 2012, 10 years after Monster's establishment. Despite its relatively recent foundation, Bang quickly rose to the top of the energy drink industry, lagging just behind Monster in sales in 2022. That year, Red Bull led the market with $6.8 billion in sales, closely followed by Monster with $4.9 billion, and Bang earning a respectable $1.3 billion, according to Statista. However, in September 2022, Bang suffered a significant setback when Monster filed a successful false advertising lawsuit against it. The lawsuit argued that Bang Energy deceived consumers about its ingredients and the health benefits of its drinks. One significant controversy centered around the quote-unquote super creatine label on Bang Energy's drinks, which Monster argued was deceptive given the drinks contained no actual creatine. Monster's lawsuit claimed that Bang's success was largely due to this deceptive practice, and further it contested Bang's claims about its super creatine being 20 times more effective at reaching the brain than other forms of creatine, and its unfounded assertions that its drinks could reverse mental retardation and aid in treating Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease. So this is really serious. A jury ruled in Monster's favor, luckily, holding the Bang Energy drinks did not contain any actual creatine. And consequently, Monster won a substantial $293 million in damages, including $18 million from Bang's alleged interference with Monster's retailer contracts and $3 million for supposed theft of trade secrets from Monster by ex-employees. Moreover, Monster holds a substantial claim in Bang's bankruptcy as one of its largest creditors. Monster also possesses co-rights to a 5% perpetual royalty and licensing and license for Bang Energy trademark. This position complicates Bang Energy's efforts to transfer the trademark to another buyer, further strengthening Monster's influence over Bang even without an outright purchase. So despite its advantageous position, Monster has disclosed an asset acquisition deal with Vital Pharmaceuticals. And under this agreement, a subsidiary of Monster would purchase the majority of Bang's assets for $362 million. However, Monster emphasized that while it remains optimistic about finalizing the transaction, it's not guaranteed due to the need for bankruptcy court and FTC approval. So my thoughts on this is that it kind of makes Monster look a little bit like a hypocrite. Like, just the last year, like literally less than a year ago, Monster was attempting to, you know, bring down Bang Energy and did so successfully. And I completely understand why. And I think that was a very, you know, solid case to pursue. But I find it a bit hypocritical that now they're sort of bailing slash buying them out. So yeah, what do you make of that? Like, do you agree with me that it's a little bit hypocritical, or do you think it's just like a wise business decision given how popular Bang has become?
Well, I think it's unfortunate because you mentioned that Bang Energy earns how much, like over $1 billion a year in sales? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're buying them for only, like, Monster is buying them for only around $360 million. So it doesn't seem fair to me, you know? Like, they're buying them for such a usually when a company acquires another company, they acquire them for, like, way more than how much they make in yearly revenue, right? Because it's, like, long-term investment, right? It's not like, oh, okay, this company makes $1 billion in revenue. Let's just acquire them for a third of that. Like, that just doesn't happen in the industry. So I wonder if it's just this whole situation that Bang Energy got itself in that's causing them to be, like, you know, undervalued in this.
Well, I think they're undervalued because they're bankrupt.
Yes.
So yes. That's probably why.
I'm not understanding, like, is it because of all the lawsuits that they became bankrupt? Is that the reason?
I can only imagine, like, that contributed to it for sure, because they had to, like, Monster got a pretty significant payout from that. I don't know, like, how much that contributed to their bankruptcy, but obviously, like, you know, they still were pulling in a lot of sales, but, you know, like, net sales and gross sales are obviously different. And then profit, you know, is different as well. Like, they must just not have been profiting enough. Yeah. So they got themselves in that situation somehow. And I think that lawsuit, like, even though, like, they lost money, they must have also lost, like, customers as well, because those are pretty substantial claims to be making. And I appreciate that, you know, I appreciate the Monster lawsuit. I just think it's, like, interesting how now they're sort of, like, bailing out Bang for what they probably caused, or at least in some way caused.
Yeah, it just seems like an interesting turn of events, or
yeah.
It's like, okay, we're suing you because you have all these claims. Oh, by the way, you know, we're going to go ahead and acquire you now. It's just like, well, I guess that's business for you, right? Like, always looking for the opportunities. And so because the company is bankrupt and so devalued, I guess they saw a good opportunity to swoop in and buy up their competition, you know, buy up a competitor. So smart move on the front of Monster, but sucks for Bang. But then, you know, they have to learn. They've learned a lesson the hard way in terms of, like, making all of these claims, and which, you know, we've discussed at length on, you know, these mm-hmm. on the podcast, that's very ill marketing and very it could be very detrimental. So I think I hope lesson learned, but yeah, I think it's very interesting how Monster is now. Is it a bailout, or are they, like, acquiring them? Because a bailout would mean that they would be able to continue their operations like as Bang, but it seems like it's an acquisition that's going to happen.
Yeah. Okay. They'd be acquiring their assets, kind of just like keeping the name alive.
The name is going to be alive. Okay.
I think so. I think they would have rights to the trademark and like royalty and licensing for Bang. But the energy drink market overall is like, it's, I find it to be like one of the most controversial and like lawsuit laden prone industries in like the whole food and beverage industry. Like, even I was reading about Prime energy drink, which is like associated with Logan Paul. Who is that?
Oh, my gosh, Sydney. Yeah, I was going to like mention this to you after the episode today. But yeah, that would be a good story to cover as well.
Yeah. It's because they're in, the FDA was asked to investigate like the caffeine content of this Prime drink, because it was found that it had too much caffeine. But I don't know, maybe it was also making claims that like Red Bull, like it'll give you wings, even though that's not a claim. That's just like a joke marketing tactic. But I find that like by the year, the energy drink market is getting more competitive and there's more like, you know, claims that are being made and lawsuits and things like that. So it's a very like, this doesn't surprise me at all. I think like the top players like Monster, Red Bull, I think even like Rockstar is up there. Like, I think they really just want to maintain their positions at the top. So they'll kind of do whatever they need to do in order to stay there. But that was also, the Prime one is interesting because it just proves how influential, like, you know, influencers can be and whatnot. So, yeah. Anyway, that is the end of this episode of the X Talks Food Podcast. If you like today's show, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Thanks, everyone, and see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the X Talks Food Industry Podcast. If you enjoyed our discussions today, please share the episode with your friends and colleagues, and be sure to subscribe in order to be notified when a new episode is released. To join in on the discussion, you can find X-Talks on social media, email podcast@xtalks.com, or comment on the articles directly. Links are in the show description. Take a moment to join our community at xtalks.com to get access to everything we have to offer, including webinars, job listings, virtual meetings, articles, and more. The views and opinions expressed in the podcast are those of the speakers sharing them. They should not be taken as professional advice and do not necessarily reflect the policy or position Honeycomb Worldwide. For further information, email us at podcast@xtalks.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.